This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood to let your hair down and shake a leg at Jazz Fest, stroll through a unique evening photo gallery in the French Quarter, or rub elbows with entertainment industry leaders, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Martha Redbone returns to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival this weekend. And to say she's excited about her return would be an understatement.
Yes, Lord Jesus, thank you. I'm so thankful. That's one of my favorite places on the planet, let me tell you. You know, I just absolutely love, love, love New Orleans Jazz Fest. I mean, I love every single thing about it.
This will be Redbone's fourth appearance at Jazz Fest, and this time she's shifting gears from rhythm and blues to the music of her childhood, growing up in the mountains of Kentucky. Redbone is a musician of African-American, Choctaw, Cherokee, and Shawnee descent. Her latest CD, The Garden of Love, Songs of William Blake, was a happy accident as her husband and songwriting partner Aaron Whitby found a book of poems by the English poet lying around their home. He opened it and found a work called A Poison Tree.
And he looked at it and said, hey, you know, hon, look at this. This looks like it could be a great kind of bluesy song. You know, a poison tree. And so we looked at it and, you know, and the words are exactly, I was angry with my friend. You know, I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not, my wrath did grow. I immediately thought friend and foe, well, Hatfields and the McCoys, that's Appalachia to me, you know.
I was angry with my friend. Told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe. I told it not, my wrath did grow.
We sorted through about 150 songs and pulled out about a good 25 of them. The melodies literally just flowed out of my mouth as I was reading them on the page. I mean, just it's so easily, you know, I can't even describe how natural it was. And the majority of the songs were from his collection of Songs of Innocence and Songs of Experience. So he wrote them. William Blake wrote them as songs.
Redbone says it was important to tap her native folk roots for this album.
My mom is Native American and my dad is African American. And my mom is Cherokee, Choctaw, and Shawnee. My grandpa was Choctaw and came up to Appalachia to work in the mines in the 30s. And that's where he met my grandma. We've been in those mountains forever. I think our kind of documents go back to like 1760 or something like that. What kind of inspired me to make this record was we'd lost a lot of our elders. I kind of wanted to honor them in a way. And, you know, being a musician, I always think in a musical way everything should be through song, you know. And I thought, well, this could be a really nice way to honor this wonderful culture of people who I come from and who raised me.
Surprisingly, Redbone was shy as a child and did not find her singing voice until she was an adult.
After college, I moved to London, England, and I was working with Parliament Funkadelic, and also I was an independent graphic designer. And I brought in my weekly artwork, and then that day that I happened to go in, these producers were on the phone, and there was someone who was supposed to come in from Paris to sing this song, and they had this deadline, and they couldn't find them, and they weren't able to make it, and they booked the time and spent the money for the studio and couldn't get out of it and change it, and they were going to lose money. So I walked in, and the label person said, you know, do you sing? And I said, well, kind of, you know, like that. And they said, well, you're American, aren't you? All American black girls can sing, you know. So, don't you sing in the church, you know, that kind of stuff. And I said, well, I'm Catholic, actually, you know. So that's how it happened. It was, you know, kind of right place at the right time.
And Redbone is actually a nickname she disliked as a child.
Oh, look at little Redbone. Look at little Redbone, you know. And so I was called that my whole life, and I hated it. And then as I got older and my dad was ill, my dad was the one who named me that. So I kind of looked up the meaning. What does that thing mean anyway? And when I saw that it was a derogatory term for people who had Native and African-American ancestry, read that, and I thought, like that, you know, to myself as a kid. Oh, that's, ugh. Then my dad got very sick and eventually passed away. And I thought, you know, he called me that because that's what my mom was and that's what they were, a combination. I was a combination of the two of them. He didn't say it to insult me. He said it because it was meant in love. And I guess I went through this kind of healing process from that because I had such a stigma about that. You know, and I thought I should embrace the things that I really hate, you know, be proud of it, you know, because, you know, when I was a kid growing up, it was really tough having a Native mom, you know, having a mom growing up in the 70s, you know, black was beautiful, you know, everyone had this big Angela Davis afro and fist up in the air and black power and this kind of stuff. And then here's my mom, you know, picking me up off the school bus, you know, who looked like Mary Tyler Moore, you know what I mean? You know, and I got a lot of stick for that, you know, in school and got into a lot of fights and got my butt kicked all the time. I decided in my kind of music career that I would honor her and honor our family because she really worked hard. You know, she got a lot of stick for having these two colored kids, you know.
Today, Redbone has embraced it all. And you can feel the magic when her blend of raw Appalachian mountain music, gospel, funk, blues, and Native roots intersect on her latest CD, The Garden of Love, Songs of William Blake. Martha Redbone and her Roots Project band perform songs from The Garden of Love CD and other works, including Indie Soul, at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival on Sunday, April 28th at the Sheraton New Orleans Fay Dodo Stage, 1:30 p.m.
It is only for riches that I can crave. I have mental joy and mental health and mental friends and mental wealth. I've a wife I love and that loves me.
You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Acclaimed live music and portrait photographer Michael Weintraub will capture your imagination with his surrealist portrait series that captures the identity of world musicians, New Orleans legends, and Grammy Award winners without showing their face. And he's here to talk about this unique gallery experience. Well, Michael, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks for having me.
Now, on the eve of Jazz Fest, you are operating a pop-up gallery in the French Quarter that will change the way we view Grammy Award-winning musicians. Tell us about the portrait exhibit you call Instrument Head. What is it?
Instrument Head is a project that I've been working on for over 6 years where I photograph musicians with their instruments covering their face. And the whole idea is to leave hints in the photographs to where people can guess who the people are who are their fans.
How did you come up with this idea?
While shooting in the photo studio, I would always try to do things that spark emotion to catch the musician off guard. I'd say, put your guitar down your shirt, and, you know, it would create a different emotion. It would kind of make it lighter in the room, and it would just make something fun.
Is there a deeper meaning behind replacing someone's head?
The catchphrase to the project is, it's where their head is really at. So by replacing their face, it just creates a different element. Photography is usually about the eyes in portrait work. And so every time I've ever thought about portraits, I'm always thinking about the eyes. But now I'm covering up the eyes. But when you look at these images, you can still feel the person's energy.
Well, this definitely stands out. What I'd like you to do, since this is radio, I need you to paint a vivid picture of a few of the musicians that are represented and let us know what they look like with an instrument on their head.
Okay. For instance, I photographed Bill Summers, who was a percussionist for Herbie Hancock and the Headhunters. He's a New Orleans native, and, you know, he's known for playing percussive instruments like the shakeray and bata drums. And when we photographed him, I have him with the shakeray in front of his face with a bata drum crown where he's holding up like a machete in the air to where he looks like a headhunter. So, you know, I'm trying to tell the story of the artist through their instrument. I'm not only photographing famous people, but I'm also photographing people who play indigenous instruments from the country that they're from. There's a woman named Falu who's an artist in New York, and she's an Indian singer from India, and I photographed her with the tempura, wearing her native dress. So a lot of these images, whether I'm photographing an imbira player from Zimbabwe or a tabla player from India, you know, a lot of these people wear their dress from the countries that they come from, so it tells a different kind of story. It's all about telling a different kind of story with a still image.
Can you talk about the session you had with Uncle Lionel Batiste?
Oh, my gosh, that was an amazing day. Benji from the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, whose family run Preservation Hall, gave me the space to be able to set up the studio there. So Uncle Lionel Batiste and Benny Jones Sr. from the Treme Brass Band came. And so normally either the instruments are down their shirt or suspended from the air, or they're holding them with their hands. Now, Uncle Lionel Batiste, may he rest in peace, is a much older gentleman, so I couldn't have him holding that giant bass drum, nor would he be able to hold it over his head. So Benny Jones had the idea of using a coat hanger. So we actually hung Uncle Lionel's drum from the ceiling of Preservation Hall with two coat hangers from a pipe, and I had Uncle Lionel actually standing on one of those old wooden benches, you know, to where his chin was underneath the drum, so it looked like it was his head, and so his hands would be free. It was a really unique experience, and earlier that day, Big Chief Monk Boudreau, I met him at the bar next door, and then we walked over and we did the shoot, and he put on all of his feathers, and it was a great exchange. And, you know, when I do a lot of these photo shoots, I'm shooting normal portraits as well, not only the instrument heads. The instrument heads is a vessel to get them in the door. And, you know, I get people to perform for me, and they sing for me, like Big Chief Monk Boudreau was playing his tambourine and singing me old Indian songs, and these people are performers, and when I get them to perform, they forget that they're doing a photo shoot, and then they start to feel comfortable, and they start to feel comfortable with me, so the exchange becomes honest. I'm all about creating an honest environment. So to go back to your question about Uncle Lionel Batiste, it was an amazing day to get to spend with him at Preservation Hall. And just the fact that he wanted to do it, and I'm really just honored that we were able to do this before he passed.
And then there's Bootsy Collins. That is a heck of a photo. I mean, it just grabs your eye.
Bootsy Collins is such a flamboyant character. You know, he wears the top hat, he wears the star sunglasses, he wears the crazy outfits and the platform shoes. When you think of funk music, you think of those glasses with the stars on it, and he plays a bass that is shaped like a star. So, you know, a lot of times these musicians, their instruments are just as famous as they are. So, you know, it's a fun experience for everyone because it's like nothing that they've ever done before. It's a bright red photograph, basically, and it's very vibrant. And I hope that when you look at it, that you can feel some emotion.
There's no doubt, once you see that photograph, you know who it is. Now, this is going to be a pop-up exhibit that's going to be in the French Quarter for both weekends of Jazz Fest, or
yes,
for the whole 10 days?
For the whole 10 days. It's going to open on Thursday, April 25th, and then it's going to close on May the 5th. And we are in connection with the Frenchman Street Art Market, the night market. So what people will do is they'll come to Frenchman Street. It's across from DBA. They'll walk into the night market where there's a bunch of amazing artists who are showing their work. I'm going to be in conjunction with the art market and become a part of their community for 10 days, and people are going to be able to walk in, see all the art, and then walk into a giant warehouse and see live music. I'm going to have a portrait studio set up, so if you pop in during the week, I might be doing a photo shoot in there. You never know who you're going to see in the space.
Who's going to play?
Well, on opening night, April 25th, DJ Logic is going to perform, and Papa Molly, who has recently moved to New Orleans, is going to perform as Papa Molly and Friends. And the Friends are scheduled to be Eric McFadden, Nigel Hall, Eric Bolivar, and Robert Mercurio from Galactic. Now, other people have said they were going to come to the show, like Charlie Musselwhite and Lenny White and Martha Redbone. And a lot of these artists who are going to be, their photographs are going to be shown. You know, you never know if these guys are going to sit in and play, but, I mean, there'll definitely be a lot of them in attendance at the show. And then over the weekend, I'm going to have some people perform. A guy named Dustin Luke has a band called the Royal Vagabonds, and they should be performing on Saturday and Sunday of the first weekend. And then on the next opening, which is May 1st, will be DJ Logic and the High and Mighty Brass Band from New York. So you never know what's going to happen. So there should be music happening almost every night of the week, so please pop by to see what we're doing. And it's going to be free to the public. I just want them to come in and be able to see the musicians that they love in a different light.
It's a beautiful project.
Thank you so much.
Michael, thank you for talking with me.
Oh, it's a real pleasure.
Michael Weintraub's pop-up studio is located at 2121 Charter Street in connection with the Frenchman Art Market. Open daily from 7 p.m. to close, April 25th through May 5th. A portion of the proceeds will benefit the Tipitinas Foundation and the New Orleans Musicians Assistance Foundation.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to New Orleans, where people, when you tell them where you're from, they say, welcome home. It ain't about where you're from, darling. Down here, it's all about where you're at. You heard? And I ain't talking about did you hear me. I know you can hear me, but did you heard me? Just nod your head and say, yeah, you're right. First thing you notice is the way the air feels. Thick like rude, thick like molasses, thick like a slow southern drawl where people smile and say, how y'all doing? How y'all is? How y'all be? How's your mom and them doing, you dig?
This week, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival Foundation kicks off its sixth annual free conference. The Sync Up event brings entertainment industry experts to New Orleans to help locals get a grip on business trends. This Friday and Saturday morning, and next Friday and Saturday morning, Sync Up has free panel discussions at the New Orleans Museum of Art from 9 a.m. to 12:30. WWNO's Paul Mawson talked with Scott Ages of the Jazz and Heritage Foundation about the conference.
Well, it started really, really small. It's still quite intimate, shall we say, compared to the other music and entertainment industry conferences that you may have heard about. And it's about the entertainment industry, hopefully from the perspective of the independent musician, filmmaker, and other folks, especially those who try to distribute their content through all of these new digital media technologies that we have. So really the idea is, how do I as an independent artist figure out the landscape of this new media universe that's out there? And that really is the crux of what we're talking about.
So it's for the independent artist.
It is.
A chance to talk to pros in the business.
Some of the biggest.
It takes place in the mornings, on Friday and Saturday mornings of Jazz Fest.
The doors open for registration at 9. The first panel starts at 10, and we go until about 12:30, and then we go over to the festival.
And this takes place over at NOMA.
Yes, at the New Orleans Museum of Art. And it's completely open to the public, not having to pay to get in.
All right, so give us an idea of some of the folks that are going to be there and some of the topics
you know,
we're going to be talking about.
I have to say, some internationally renowned leaders in all of these fields basically just said, yeah, sure, I'll come. So great example is there's this song that's a big hit song called Thrift Shop. So this song has gone from underground digital thing to NPR. Now it's top 40 radio, all without a record label.
That's kind of a new phenomenon, isn't
it? Exactly. So I made it my business to track down the manager of this band, a guy named Zach Quillen, who is primarily based in Seattle. And he said, and I kid you not, I've always wanted to go to Jazz Fest. Sure. So that kind of sums up everything that we're trying to do.
Only everything were that easy, right?
Right.
You want people and the independent artists to have useful information at the end of this. Is that right?
Absolutely. Look, we have a mission here to try to provide an educational platform. That How I Built My Touring Business panel is a really great example. And that is a combination of some major players from out of town, but really the focus is on the local artists. So we've got Ivan Neville, we've got John Michael Ruchel. Our angle is we've paired the artist with their booking agents or their managers, as whichever the case may be. And in each of those cases, the artist is fortunate to have smart, hardworking, dedicated people working alongside them, helping to make sure that this career blossoms the way it's supposed to. And that's the kind of thing that a lot of other musicians are always anxious to know about. How do they make that happen?
And I'll put in a plug for Saturday, May 4th, when Anya Grundmann, who's director of NPR Music, will be doing the keynote interview or address. I'm not sure what we call it.
I mean, I think you and I are both. I know I am a huge fan of NPR Music. What they do from a musician's perspective of growing an audience and from a consumer's perspective of having the ability to explore new music, NPR Music has created online this website that is this enormous portal that's, in my opinion, the most diverse and eclectic out there.
All right, so I'm an independent artist. I'm listening to this, and I go, gee, I'd really like to get involved at SyncUp. How do they go about doing that? What do they need to know?
Well, they need to know that it's in the morning, on the mornings of the Friday and Saturday of both weekends of Jazz Fest. Admission is free, but seating is limited, so you do need to register in advance. And all you have to do that is go to our website, which is syncupconference.com.
Scott Ages, he's Director of Programs, Marketing, and Communication at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation. Thanks, Scott, and best of luck on another successful conference.
Thank you, Paul. It's always a pleasure.
SyncUp takes place at NOMA from 9 a.m. to 12:30, both Friday and Saturday mornings of Jazz Fest. Free admission, registration, and information at jazzandheritage.org/SyncUp or at wwno.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.